always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider and lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine Sunday night, definitely night my time, by you guys. The Lakers just beat the Sacramento Kings with a final score of 125-101. And they looked about as good as you could, you know, as they've looked recently. And so we'll talk about that. So in the sense of who am I joined by? Nobody really. But near the end of the show, I will certainly get to as many of your guys' questions and comments as I possibly can, which means, as per usual, I am joined by you guys. A quick reminder, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you guys are watching or listening. If you guys are watching on Twitter, you can find the show on YouTube at youtube.com/@LakersLounge. If you guys are listening to the show and you're looking for a video version of the show for some reason, then you can find it at youtube.com/@LakersLounge. And then if you are listening on podcasts and want to continue doing so, then hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey. But I do not care so long as you're subscribed. Today, like I said, though, we're going to be talking about this game. It has been an eventful few days that I have taken off. I basically made the decision, you know, Christmas was on a Thursday, and then decided, you know what, going to go ahead and take Friday off. Obviously, don't normally record on Saturdays, so continued to just hang with family then. And then here I am on a Sunday with a whole bunch of stuff to catch up on. So we're going to be catching up on all of that over the course of the show. Most notably, obviously, going to be talking about Austin Reeves missing a month. That's a bummer. Tonight was, you know, it was interesting to see what the rotation looked like with J.J. Redick's tweaks. And then also as they try to work out playing without Austin. But we'll talk about all of that good stuff and get to as many things as we can. And then, like I said at the top, if you guys have any questions or comments, hit me with them in the chat, and I will get to them over the course of the show. And then tomorrow is a actual mailbag Monday, I believe. I don't think the Lakers are playing tomorrow, but the Lakers are not playing tomorrow. Yeah, so tomorrow is an actual mailbag Monday, which means get your questions in the form of a 5-star review to the iTunes review panel, and I'll get to those questions as well as other questions in tomorrow's episode as well. But yeah, the Lakers won. It was nice to watch that. So we'll talk about that to kick things off. Mike is just kind of slowly and steadily just traveling upward. Hopefully that's what the Lakers will do. But yeah, the Lakers improved to 20-10. They beat the Sacramento Kings, who fell to 8-24 on the season. 125-101 was the final. And even that isn't really indicative of the beatdown that the Lakers put on the Kings. First half, not all that pretty, right? The Lakers scored 68 points, and you know, Sacramento kind of kept themselves in the game to a greater extent than maybe we would like. But then the Lakers jumped out and jumped on top of the Sacramento Kings at the beginning of the third quarter. Then I thought they kind of took their foot off of the pedal, but they won the third quarter. J.J. Redick said after the game, this is the first game all season that the Lakers have won every quarter in a game. They won the first quarter 30-24. They win the second quarter, 38-29. They win the third quarter, 31-27. Then they won the fourth quarter, 26-21, with some of those minutes being of the garbage variety. That was nice to see. But yeah, the Lakers, they took care of business here. They did cover. I was a little nervous about the Lakers being able to cover here. They actually, I thought there are a few takeaways from this game. So first and foremost, Luka didn't play the entire first quarter. I like that adjustment. So we'll talk about that. The Lakers ran a much higher percentage of organized offense. So we'll talk about that. They did. I see the Direwolf 8114 down there at the bottom, still starting Rui. I just can't. They did continue to start Rui, which I don't love either. I don't get the decision. But they the other meaningful adjustment or change that I saw in this game as well was a much more conscientious effort to get the ball into the paint on almost every possession. So those are the few, you know, kind of very notable takeaways from this game. And we'll get to all of them over the course of the show as well. But just kind of staying macro, look, the Lakers had lost three in a row. You lose Austin for a month at least. You have JJ Redick calling out the team saying that their next team meeting was going to be, quote, uncomfortable. You then enter the next game basically walking back that statement, saying like, well, you know, uncomfortable. It just depends on like what somebody's normal comfort level might be. And then Rui starts and you're like, we're still doing this, huh? And it was nice to see the Lakers overcome the bad starting lineup. It was also nice to see that bad starting lineup really jump on the Kings in that third quarter and build out a 30-point lead. I thought Luka's shot selection in this one was pretty bad, honestly. That was probably my only really main critique outside of the starters. But overall, this was an important win. You know, if you lose this one, now you're in a tailspin. That would have been four in a row. You can't lose to the Sacramento Kings. I believe this is the sixth time in a row that the Lakers have beat the Kings. But if you lose this one, and you enter the territory, you'd be at the minus in the point differential. The Lakers jump back into the plus point differential with this win. The Lakers continue to sit at the four spot. They are 20-10. The Houston Rockets are at 19-10. And if you lose this one, you look ahead at the schedule. And no, this is like you get kind of lucky with the timing of Austin's injury here. But if you lose this one, you go and you play against the Detroit Pistons, a long, physical, athletic team that tends to give the Lakers some problems. If you lose this game to the Sacramento Kings, now all of a sudden you're risking losing five in a row. If you lose that one against Detroit, then you play Memphis, who've been playing better basketball of late, mostly because Ja Morant hasn't been healthy, but still, Memphis hasn't been playing the best basketball of late. Probably split one of those two. And now all of a sudden you're looking at like 1-6 over your last seven. But the nice thing is they do win this one. They hopefully they can still take care of business against Detroit. Detroit is not going to be in the best of moods given what Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers just did to them tonight. But still, you know, you're playing against a Detroit team that has an extra night in LA to get up to no good. It's a younger team, the Detroit Pistons are. So, you know, maybe the Lakers should just send along, like I believe Kobe used to do this, but basically, like, you just tell them, hey, this is the best club to hit in L.A. This is the best strip joint to hit in L.A. Just go ahead, get after it, you young Detroit Pistons, you. And then hopefully they're really hungover for that game on Tuesday that the Pistons are. But for the Lakers, this was an important win. not only that they won the game itself, but also to win the way that they did, where this game was never in question. This game, you know, there was no letdown moment in the way that you saw against the Phoenix Suns the other night. This was a thorough ass kicking, basically, in you know, from midway through the second quarter on, the Lakers just jumped out to a nice, comfortable lead, maintained that nice, comfortable lead, and they were able to take care of business from there. The place I want to start with this in terms of like notable game notes is the starting lineup, right? We don't see a change there. And no, you know what? I'm not going to start negative. I'll get to the negative later. Where I'm going to start instead is the biggest change in this one, and that is the organized offense. Our friend of the show and one of my favorite Lakers creators out there, Kranjus, obviously does a ton of charting when it comes to the percentage of time that the Lakers spend running organized offense. And apparently in this one, they were running organized offense at an almost 80% clip. And, you know, it really showed, right? The Lakers, whenever they needed a bucket, they tended to get a bucket. Whenever they needed a good look, they tended to get a good look. And that might be the case against the Sacramento Kings, no matter what you run or what you don't run. The Kings are a pretty miserable basketball team. But still, what you don't want to do against a team like the Kings, especially a Russell Westbrook team, is you don't want to give them any hope. And I thought by running so much organized offense, the Lakers basically never gave the Kings any hope. And that basically set the tone of this one that was like, all right, you guys, we'll trade baskets for a little bit. We're going to continue scoring at the clip that we know that we're capable of scoring. And at some point, you're going to fall off. And that's essentially what happened. And, you know, I thought that the guys for the Lakers, who you would expect to kind of come out and be defensive tone setters, I thought they did that enough. You look at the plus minuses in this one, and it's nice to see that all of them are in the Lakers starting group. You had Rui and Ayton leading the way. You had Luka at plus 22. You had LeBron at plus 20. You had Marcus at plus 10. The next closest bench player was Jake at plus 13. And then you had Nick Smith Jr. at plus 10. So anybody who played like meaningful minutes in this game was a sizable plus in the ledger, the game ledger. And, you know, I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, and especially you look at the kind of guys, right? LeBron, Rui, Ayton, Luka, like the reason that their plus minuses were so high is because the organized offense was way up and they're the Lakers' best offensive players. So it was nice to see that aspect of the approach to this game worked out. Will this continue? Probably not. I'm going to be honest. I just think a lot of times when the going gets tough, guys kind of default back to their habits. And this is why, you know, I was always kind of nervous about the way that the Lakers handled training camp and much of the season to this point is there hasn't been a ton of habit building. You know, with guys being in and out of the rotation and with the medical staff having such a clear say in, you know, hey, we want to keep this guy fresh. We want to keep this guy healthy. We want to keep this guy upright. You know, that does lead, I think, sometimes to, you know, some very conservative approaches to guys' availabilities. And that has made it kind of difficult, as JJ Redick has pointed out, to get the kind of reps that the Lakers need. And, you know, for the Lakers to really, you know, make it so that they more frequently rely on their organized offense, you're just going to need to focus on it more frequently. And then I think win in those games that that is the focus. And I thought tonight it was very clearly the Lakers' focus to get out there and run sets as frequently as they could, and to get out there and you know, make sure that, you know, there were some obvious stretches there where the game got away from them a little bit. I actually thought JJ was pretty good with his timeouts tonight. There was a stretch where the Lakers had built their lead up to 30-ish, and then I thought Luka, with some bad passes and some poor decisions and some bad shot selection, kind of let the Kings kind of crawl back into this one, and I thought JJ used a really good timeout. The first play out of the timeout was Luka getting the ball in the post and getting a foot in the paint and scoring a nice, easy bucket. You know, those are the kinds of things that the Lakers coaching staff need to do all the time to basically remind this hugely talented offensive team, hey, yes, we are very naturally talented, but we also need to, you know, have some good habits out there offensively. And I thought they did a good job of that tonight. The next kind of tweak, the actual tweak that we saw to the rotation here, was Luka exiting the game with about 2 minutes and 30 seconds or so in the first quarter. Normally, he plays the entire first, and JJ Redick said that this is basically going to be the approach for the foreseeable future. Now, whether that is whether that's because of Austin being out, or whether that's an actual adjustment to, you know, something that the coaching staff saw, I haven't seen any quote on, you know, to clarify that. But I like, look, the league is basically moving towards the shorter, more explosive stints for players, even stars. Now it's all relative, right? So you're not going to have Luka go out there and play a 5 minute stint so that he can sprint all the time. That isn't going to happen. But, you know, limiting him in that first quarter to about 9.5, 10 minutes rather than 12 full minutes, I like that. And then I also thought in that first quarter, the point of the offense wasn't just to get Luka the ball and just to have him score. I actually thought it was a lot more egalitarian, and I really think it allowed more guys to get into a rhythm. I don't think it's a coincidence that LeBron had the shooting night he did. He went 11 of 13 from the field, and you know, he was a much bigger part of the offense earlier on in the game. I think that's something that the Lakers are going to have to do more often. I've called it this before, and I'll stand by the analogy, but the whole Luka scores a bunch and then hope that opens up the offense for everybody else, that trickle-down economics thing, like, I'm good on that. I don't think that's a sustainable approach. I actually thought that tonight you saw this organized offense lead to good looks for everybody early on in the game and throughout the game, and it led to a much more rhythmic, you know, and balanced level of production for a Lakers team that really needs that, you know. So that was good to see. And you look at the overall production from everybody here. Yeah, yes, Luka led the way. 34 points for him on 11 of 23 shooting, 5 of 14 from three-point range. You did have a couple of stretches there where I thought Luka was kind of forcing the step-back threes. That's something that I think they're going to have to rein in a little bit. But 7 of 8 from the free throw line, 34 points, 7 assists, 5 boards, plus 22. Obviously, LeBron's just crazy efficient night. 24 points on 11 of 13 from the field, 1 of 2 from three-point range. The 1 of 2 from three-point range feels notable because I thought the Lakers were really aggressive in getting LeBron the ball closer to the basket. One of the things that I always like later in guys' career is, rather than hoping that they can create from the three-point in, I really like it when, and they started doing this with Kobe on the back half of his career, where give him the ball one dribble away. That's usually in that like 15 to 20 foot range. The closer, the better, obviously. But give LeBron the ball with a live dribble, one dribble away from the basket, and defenses are just screwed at that point. There's just not much you can do. You basically have to under help and hope LeBron misses, or over help and hope that the guy who winds up with an open corner three misses. And that to me is like, that's how you utilize that kind of dynamic threat that LeBron is, that Luka is. And whenever Austin comes back, you know, a month or 6 weeks from now, whatever it is, this is something that I think the Lakers really need to focus on with both LeBron and Luka when Austin is healthy. And give me those guys with the basketball is basically fulcrums of the offense with a live dribble, one dribble away from the basket, and I just have no earthly idea what a team does with that at that point, because Luka is so strong that he's going to get to the rim very easily. LeBron is so strong that he is going to get to the rim very easily against almost every team, right? Like the Celtics have Jaylen Brown. He's going to make it more difficult on those guys to get there. You know, the Denver Nuggets have Aaron Gordon, and he's going to make life more difficult. Obviously, you have Lu Dort, the dirtiest player in the league, is going to pull all kinds of nonsense to keep those guys from the rim, no matter where they start their possession. So yes, like that approach is obviously going to, it's not going to be 1.3 points per possession, no matter like, you know, who the Lakers are playing and stuff. Sometimes it'll be higher, sometimes it'll be lower. But overall, I think that's when the Lakers offense will be cooking the best. And here's the other thing too, is when you get LeBron the ball and you start his possession that close to the basket, that actually unlocks the game for Rui and for Jake and for Nick Smith Jr. as it did in this game. Give me those guys, get those guys easier looks through more natural and logical scoring approaches rather than, yeah, we just want Luka to isolate a bunch and then hope that the other team basically adjusts and sends him a double. No, we can end that stuff there. Give me LeBron with the ball at the elbow, Luka with the ball at the elbow, or Austin running a pick and roll with LeBron or Luka, and that to me is going to be kind of the bread and butter of this offense. Luka obviously can have the ball from a little bit higher up more frequently, because he's Luka Doncic and because of the stage of his career that he's at. But LeBron in the post, Luka in the post, that's going to be the way that the Lakers really turn it up and really get their offense running it at the kind of efficiency that we saw from it tonight.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Casino.
All right, that was a whole bunch of positivity, okay? Whole bunch of positivity, and I promise I'm not going to linger on this point too long. I'm in a good mood because I got a great TV for Christmas for like a crazy markdown. Shouts to Facebook Marketplace. All right. JJ Redick's full of shit. Like, I'm sorry. The whole... Oh, we're gonna have a team meeting and it's gonna get uncomfortable and it's gonna be this and it's gonna be that. And don't you ask me any questions, because I already know that I screwed up here, but I'm not allowed to adapt. Like, no, like, just stop. All right. Like, you can't do all of this like hysterics and huffing and puffing about how this and that and the other is, you know, the problem with this team. Stop. You can't do all of that and then not bench Rui the next game. Not when all of the statistics point very directly at Rui being the problem. You can't do it. And you can't call out LeBron and you can't call out Luka. And then when you're asked about it at practice the next day, ask if you like directly address those guys. And it was like, yeah, no, I thought that was addressed enough after the game. Nope. Fuck all that nonsense. The Lakers are always going to have an accountability problem. So long as Luka, LeBron, and JJ refuse to hold each other accountable. I want to see a moment when LeBron gets into it with JJ. Because that tells me that they care. I want to see a moment when JJ gets into it with Luka. Because that tells me that he's willing to you know, tug on the Bears, tug on Superman's cape a little bit. To tell him, no, like, this is the way that we got to play here. Now, I didn't see any clip. Maybe I'll ask around to see how that timeout went when I thought Luka's turnovers and shot selection got the Kings kind of back into the outskirts of the game is how I put it in the tweet. I'll find out. But you can't do all of the stuff that he did after that Houston Rockets loss and not change anything, really. And or like the only change in approach is we're gonna sub out Luka a couple minutes earlier. No, come on. Stop. Either you're coaching this team or you're not. And like, look, the only way that the Lakers can compete at the level of Denver, OKC, kind of put Houston in that group. Like, the only way that the Lakers can jump into that category of basketball team is if you have Luka willing to do the dirty work sometimes and LeBron willing to do the dirty work sometimes, and that's setting a tone to everybody else in the organization that if those guys are willing to do the dirty work every so often, I have to be too. And like, I'm going to look at the numbers here. Now, Rui did play. I would imagine this is pretty close to a season low in terms of minutes here. He played... Yeah, he averages 32.7 minutes per game. He played 26 minutes in this one. And I thought early on in the game, there were a few plays that you just can't have. You had him flat-footed on some defensive rebounds, and his guy got an offensive rebound. He couldn't stay in front of DeMar DeRozan. Like, it was not what I was hoping to get from a minutes perspective or a role perspective. I just think Jake LaRavia makes a lot more sense with that starting group than Rui Hachimura does, because like Stu Lance noticed it in the game just now, where he was like, man, it just always seems like Jake kind of is around the basketball, right? And it's like, yeah, because he moves his fucking feet. like, man, Jake just always seems to understand, like, you know, how to be around the basketball. Yeah, man, he's not wearing the cement brick twos. When Rui is out there, watch his feet and watch the number of times that he just kind of plays back on his heels and in an upward posture. And it's like, yeah, if you play like that, if that's how you're going to operate when you don't have the basketball, when your guy doesn't have the basketball, that's going to make what you're going to need to do whenever the ball is loose is get back into an aggressive stance and then go get the basketball. But if you just always try to stay, you know, on your toes in some kind of balanced form and explosive form, that's going to make it so when the ball comes loose, you're already moving towards the basketball it's not rocket science how Jake LaRavia just always seems to be around the basketball for steals, for rebounds, offensive or defensive. It doesn't matter. He's always moving out there. And he's like the anti-Rui in that sense. And now, is he going to shoot the ball as well as Rui does? No. But does it really matter if Rui is shooting four? Well, tonight he shot 4 3-pointers. So good on Rui for that. But on the season, is he averaging? What's he averaging on the season? Doesn't show. Let's see. On the season, he's averaging, 4 attempts per game. That's not enough. That's not enough for Rui's, three-point percentage to really matter. So by the way, like Jake being more active offensively and defensively makes it so that LeBron doesn't have to be your only active defender on the wing, which if I'm the Lakers would be a pretty solid sell to me, because you can't expect a 41-year-old LeBron to go out there and be your most active defender who isn't that, or certainly your most active front court player. Like that's a recipe for disaster, especially in the regular season when we know LeBron load manages out there on the court. Like that's how he has stayed healthy as often as he has and as long as he has. Like that he's very smart in managing his body and managing those minutes. So you have to coach and build out a rotation that takes that into account. Maybe by the time you get to the playoffs and LeBron is that much more engaged on a game by game and a possession by possession basis, maybe then you can get away with Rui being out there a little bit more. But even then, like you're going to be playing against other teams that are that much more engaged. So I would rather get Jake those reps as quickly as I can. Whenever Austin comes back, I would keep Smart in that starting lineup and basically make it so that he, can hopefully thrive at the point of attack. But what the Lakers can't do, and what we can't get from JJ Redick, is all the ranting and raving and that leading to no change whatsoever. That is how you lose locker rooms. Like that is how, if you're a role player on that team and you see JJ calling out in essence LeBron and Luka, not by name, but in ways that I guess he did kind of say that, since LeBron came back, their organized offense hasn't been very good. But you can't have the head coach, very clearly call out the starters or your 30-minute a night guys and then see those guys' roles not change. And that was a bummer to see tonight. Now they won this game, and I don't want to, harp on this for too long, but I don't know. I've never really been all that sold on JJ Redick, especially coming off of how poorly he coached that series against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And this is the kind of thing that I'm always kind of nervous about. It's like, is he giving us and fans lip service, or is he actually going to call out the guys who need to be called out? And is he actually going to coach this team the way that it needs to be coached? All right. Let's go ahead. And by the way, like I am obviously pretty frustrated with Rui Hachimura, the player. I don't love his motor. I don't think he shoots enough three-pointers. I think he far too frequently just kind of floats around out there, especially if he isn't getting shots. That said, he has been playing out of position for multiple years now. And I don't want my entire grading scale on this guy to be based on an entire data sample when he hasn't been playing at the position or in the kinds of lineups or guarding the types of guys that he needs to, in order to be successful. Now we can talk about whether what he needs to be successful is maybe a little too narrow. Okay. that's a fine conversation or whatever. But what I'm not going to do is just sit here and shit on Rui Hachimura, the basketball player, when in reality, the person who needs to be kind of crapped on a little bit is the coach who keeps on putting Rui in these spots. All right. Let's go ahead and dive on into some of your guys' questions. A quick reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. All of those good buttons, they really help. And let's go ahead and play the most important clip on this here stream. Fuck Washington! First question comes from Justin Tindall. Thank you very much for the super chat. For me, JJ is Ham 2.0, no accountabilities, just points fingers, and didn't think either could win a chip. Luka takes way too many threes for me, 10.6 per game at a 32% clip. All right, so the lack of accountability thing in the moment is a bit of a concern. JJ said in after practice that like the first thing he has to do is like look at himself in the mirror, and that's where all of these adjustments happen. That's fine to say the next day, but the fact that he never says that after games in the immediate aftermath of these games indicates to me that like he knows the thing to say eventually and arrives there eventually, but when the temperature rises, those screws are tightened a little bit, and that pressure is pressuring, like he still is not quite at NBA caliber coach yet. Now he's only at second year as a coach at all, but still, this is a championship type organization, right? Championships above all else organization. And this is an era that you're entering into with a championship level player in Luka. And I'm sorry, like I don't have the patience, the Lakers don't have the patience right now for this guy to like hopefully eventually, you know, stumble into some accountability in the moment. The other thing that tells me he doesn't really do the whole accountability thing to the extent that he says he does is the fact that he doesn't change the starting group, right? Like you can say, oh, we're thinking about making these changes. There's going to be some things that we're getting ready to change. I have to be a little bit better. I have to do this. I have to do that. And then you arrive at the time to actually do those things. And you're like, no, actually what I'm doing has been working all along. Sorry, bud. Like that's not great. You know, and so if you not that it matters who I do or do not believe in as an NBA head coach, but I'm not going to be sold on JJ until he actually takes accountability in the moment. And then even more importantly, maybe acts on that accountability the next opportunity that he gets. Now, as far as like the Luka threes thing, I agree 100%. His 3-point shooting is not where it needs to be for him to shoot the number that he does. I think it does hurt the Lakers sometimes. And the problem with a lot of Luka's threes is he takes them from at or above the break, which sometimes leads to him being the primary defender who needs to get back in transition. And that can sometimes lead to what essentially become live ball turnovers, not even counting the actual live ball turnovers that he has thrown a bunch of so far this year as well. So I would like, look, Luka, when he is focused on getting into the paint, that's when the Lakers look their best, period. Now, when Luka is doing that and making three-pointers, that's when the Lakers just look unstoppable. And he looks like the best player in the league. The problem is he isn't that frequently enough. And he's not making enough threes to shoot them the way that he is. Like he's leading the league in three-point attempts, I believe. And certainly as far as like, you know, volume ball handlers, he's definitely leading the way there, but he's making them at such a low clip that they just become these empty possessions that just completely knock the Lakers off of any forward momentum. So Justin, completely agree. Next question also comes from Justin. Somebody told JJ to stay in his lane post Houston. I don't know that I would necessarily go that far, but you look at what happened there, in terms of what has changed, and nothing changed. So I think that if the Lakers are, you look at how OKC, like their culture operates, where it's like everybody is expected to defend. And does that mean that like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the defender that Alex Caruso is? No. But like, if you don't defend, you don't play for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And you look at, the way that the Denver Nuggets operate, where Jokic is such a special offensive engine that he could really just kind of spam the same type of possession over and over and over again and basically tell Jamal Murray to go space out over there. He is that good, and it would be an okay approach. But instead, you see Jokic setting all kinds of screens off and on the ball. You see him, he has improved as a defender, and does that mean that there aren't still highlight reels that you could put together of Jokic defending poorly? No, he's still going to be Jokic, but those are fewer and further between. And when you're another player on that team and you see Jokic putting in the work to get better on that side of the ball, or you see Jokic willing to do absolutely anything that is necessary for that team to win, well, that's the culture that you're expected to operate in. And you compare that to I just don't think Giannis is the leader that the Bucks need him to be. And when they traded for Dame, and that was like a very natural pick and roll tandem there, but Giannis didn't really want to set a whole bunch of screens, and that puts a ceiling on the way that the Bucks can play basketball. And when you're a player on a team with like Giannis, and you see that there are just some things that he isn't willing to do, well, you say, well, shoot, if there's a line for him, that means I can technically have a line as well. It obviously has to be tempered way down. But if there are certain things that my star is not willing to do, well, then, okay, then that's the culture here. And I think what the Lakers are going to need to arrive at eventually, and Luka says this is a quote from after tonight's game. I definitely think it starts with us. We need to show what we can do. If we're going to do it, we're both going to do it, and the group is going to follow. Luka Doncic on the leadership role he and LeBron James need to fill to get the Lakers back on track. Like, all right, there's the lip service. You're aware of the problem. And by the way, like I tweeted out that the Lakers have a very clear leadership problem after their loss to Houston. And to the people who jumped down my throat, can you look at that quote and jump out of my throat, like and preferably off of a short dock into a cold lake to sober yourself up a little bit from your fandom. But yeah, like I just think if the Lakers, and this is difficult, right? Like this is kind of uncharted territory where you have LeBron used to being a leader and Luka obviously used to being a leader, and they're both trying to balance leading the way that they would normally lead, but also working off of each other. Like that is, I'm willing to give those guys some grace, so long as I see them doing the things and setting the example that the Lakers need them to set. When I don't see them, like, because here's the thing, being the vocal leader, talking in huddles, talking on defense, organizing the offense, stuff like that. Like that is going to be a process that those guys figure out together. But what doesn't have to be a process, what shouldn't be a process, is setting the example through your own efforts, right? Leading by example. That's not something that you should need to, like, all right, well, I got to see how LeBron's going to lead here. And no. If LeBron leads by example and Luka leads by example, that becomes the Lakers culture. And if JJ is willing to press both of those guys on how important it is for the Lakers to set that culture, then that's how that culture happens. But it's not going to happen without those guys leading by example. And also, it's not going to happen without JJ being willing to bench a guy like Rui if that guy isn't living up to the example that Luka and LeBron are trying to set. Like, and making the extra play, making the smart play, rotating on defense, boxing out on defense, those are the kinds of things that if you don't see, if you look out onto the court and Rui isn't doing those things and he also isn't knocking down or taking shots, then it should be a relatively easy decision to just get him out of the game. Fuck your feelings, all that stuff. Like, what kind of culture are the Lakers trying to set? And if Luka and LeBron set a culture, and then JJ follows that up with a culture of accountability by way of minutes and role and all that stuff, and if Rob Pelinka follows that up by, trading away Rui if he doesn't feel like Rui is the culture fit that the Lakers need him to be, if those guys can't be all on the same page when it comes to what kind of culture the Lakers need to build, then it's up to Mark Walter to find the kind of person who is going to set that culture from the absolute very top down and be very crystal clear about what the expectations are if you're going to be a Los Angeles Laker. But it was a good quote, I thought, from Luka about leadership. And I continue to be a little concerned about JJ as a head coach, so long as he kind of shies away from actually coaching Luka and LeBron, just those guys. Because, like, what happened the other day, and I saw some people saying, like, oh, obviously you must have missed the memo when it happened to be JJ, calling out those guys in a film session or whatever, or bringing those guys in about and bringing them into defense. JJ clarified and said, actually, it was everybody that I brought in to talk about defense. And it's like, no, you should be able to call out your best players as a head coach. You got the fresh extension. You got full belief in you from Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss. Do the thing. Coach the team. That's what you're here for. And until you're willing to do that, then you're going to run into the same problems that Dallas kept on running into with Luka as well. All right. We good? We set here? I vast majority of that was positive, I feel like. Only in the negative stuff, like, I was responding to a comment. All right, let me just answer a really quick question. User KM4WK, if you have to put money on it, who's the first person on the team to be traded? Dalton. I mean, no matter what trade happens, I feel like it's going to be a package, right? So I think it'll be like Dalton and one of the expirings and maybe a second rounder for somebody or, like, those are the obvious candidates there. Now, if you're asking if there's any rotation players that get traded, I still think Rui is the pretty clear one here, where the Lakers would maybe trade Rui for somebody who fits into the type of player that you need in that starting lineup. And either that, or they have a conversation with Rui and say like, hey man, this is the direction that we're heading in. You're either rowing with us or you're doing your own thing. And if it's anything close to the latter, then best of luck wherever we decide to send you. But look, I don't get the sense that Rui is some kind of selfish player. And I think if the Lakers were crystal clear about what they need from him, I think that there's at least a decent chance that he gives that a go. How long it lasts, how open to what that would mean he might be, then, that's obviously with, fair to debate. But I would say Dalton is probably the likeliest guy to go. Maybe Kleba as well. It's hard to consider Kleba like this floor spacing big when he has shot, I think, our friend Jeannie tweeted that he shot like 11 threes so far this season, or 14 threes or whatever it is total. You can't shoot that few threes and be considered the floor spacing big. So, and also have that guy making, how 11 something million dollars for this season. Move his expiring money, move Gabe's expiring money. Nick Smith Jr. is clearly fine as the backup to the backup guard that Gabe is currently that role that Gabe is currently holding. Nick, I think, is pretty clear that he can hold that role, in many of the ways that Gabe has held it so far this season. And there's just much better uses of those cap slots than a backup big who doesn't, a floor spacing big who doesn't space the floor, and a, kind of coach's pet point guard who doesn't actually provide a lot of the things that, he continues to get minutes for providing. All right. Let's see. Jalen Farrell writes, what do you think about the organized offense? Does that count as coaching the guys? No, I gave him credit for that. I really did. And it was good to see. Now we need to see that continue, right? Like so the next game that the Lakers play is against a Pistons team that pressures, that plays with physicality, plays with athleticism and length. These things that have tended to knock the Lakers out of their typical, of this caliber of organized offense. If we see that fall off of a cliff immediately, then you're like, I have to analyze that game for what it is. But for right now, like if one place I will give JJ some credit here for is saying that he was going to make some adjustments. One of those adjustments being clarity of role and organized offense and getting back to those things or focusing on those things. And then immediately following that up with the way that the Lakers approached offense to this game. That was great to see, legitimately and truly great to see. It just needs to continue forward. And without it continuing forward and without the Lakers sticking with those concepts and that culture, then it's just another time that you beat the shit out of a bad Kings team, give me more of this. Give me more of this. It was great to see this game. Give me more. All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'll be right back here tomorrow at some point to answer all of your guys' questions, whatever they might be. The best way to get them answered is to leave them in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes to make sure that you don't miss that show, and to make sure that you don't miss any future shows. Hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, turn on your notifications for the channel. And until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying, I hope you guys had a great Christmas. I hope you guys are getting ready to celebrate the new year safely. Have a great rest of what is left of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody.